Well, for those of you who are expecting Geek Speak, those guys couldn't make it today. So we've got another edition of something. Monday's something. But I'm playing the Valley Voices theme, although this isn't really Valley Voices. But anyway, it's Monday, a special edition just for the membership drive. And don't forget to make your calls at 963-0139 and pledge your support for KDNK. My guest today is Charlotte Graham. Hi, Char.
Hey there.
Thanks for coming down at such short notice.
Thank you.
Char's up by Marble these days, or Redstone, somewhere up there. And she's giving away some of her wonderful books. She has two books. One is called Memoirs of a River Up the Crystal. It's actually volume two of two history books that she's written. What's the title of the first one?
They're both the same. Memoirs of a River, volume one and volume two.
Oh, okay. And but you're saying that the second one is more about Carbondale.
It's all about Carbondale.
It's all about Carbondale.
It's the fatter one.
And it's great. And she's donating these books for premiums. And I would say that if you I'd love to have a goal of $200 for the end of this show, and somebody who pledges $100, whether it's a new or renewing member, can have both copies. They're wonderful books, and they have locals in them, and obviously in great photographs and great interviews. They're a lot of fun to read. So give us a call at 963-0139, and anyone who pledges $100 or even more as a new or renewing member will have we'll get a gift of both of these books, signed copies, tied with a bow. Well, I love these books, and I have both copies. And talk about why you decided to do this. I mean, this is truly a labor of love, you know, all of this research and all of these wonderful photographs. Talk about what inspired you.
You know, it turns out that when I first came here, I got a lot of the same feeling that everybody gets that has come here from somewhere else.
Which is?
And it's that sense of awe. You know, what is it about this valley? What is it that makes this so special? We all want to be here. We all seem to just kind of tune in. And for me personally, it happened in that when we arrived in Marble, which is where we first came in, I was walking on the road, and I just felt these strong, strong kind of energy things coming down from the top of my head all the way through my body, down to my feet, into the ground.
Wow.
And it was just like roots of a wildflower trying to find its base.
And you actually felt this physically?
I felt it physically. This was 20 years ago, like the first time we were walking around.
Okay.
And so I thought, I need to find out what this is all about. And at that time, Marble and Redstone still had their own little teeny tiny phone book.
Teeny tiny phone book.
And, you know, I've always loved listening to old timers tell their stories, even when I was a kid. And I talk about, you know, I used to have an Uncle Joe, and he would come over and tell stories. And my dad would say when he left, he said, oh, those are all bull stories. So when Uncle Joe came again, I had to say, tell me some more bull stories. Tell me some more bull stories. So I knew to go to the elders. And I called around, and of course, they were very nice and everything. And I would just come over and brought my little recorder, and we would just sit and visit.
Wow.
And
visit. Visit. I love that word, visit.
It's better than interview, right?
That's just visit.
And so it started out that way. I had no intention of writing a book. I had no reason. I didn't even know why I was doing it, except that there was something about this valley that drew me in.
And so were you just trying to see if an elder or an older person would tell you the same thing, that they maybe experienced the same thing? Oh, yeah, it was the energy that kept me here, kind of thing?
And what brought them here, mm-hmm. you know? And then as I got to talking to all of them, I realized, no, there's something more. Mm. And it's the spirit of the ancestors that are here.
Ah, yes.
And that eventually got me around to meeting Clifford Duncan.
Clifford Duncan. Talk about Clifford Duncan. Aww. The late, great Clifford Duncan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was fortunate enough to meet him around 2000 or so.
I think that's how I met you.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. so. And he loved coming to this valley. He worked with Bill Kite and Alice Gustafson mm-hmm. and with the Forest Service and all, and he loved coming into this valley. And Alice knew by that time that I was writing some stories, and I had been publishing them in the Crystal Valley Echo, mm-hmm. which is the monthly paper up there.
Yeah,
and,
it's a great paper.
It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she said, well, you want to meet Clifford? And I said, of course. Well, one morning he showed up down at the Glenwood office, and she called
that.
Me.
He'd just show up.
Pop uh-huh. in. And so she called me up real quick. And that began a relationship with him that we ended up traveling to Bogota, Colombia together.
Really?
We went to Ecuador together.
Doing what?
Davina Kent here sponsored he and I to travel to Ecuador mm-hmm. After that gathering of the remember the Gathering of the mm-hmm. Nations
I back do remember
in 2007
that.
Or mm-hmm. 9 sometime. Mm-hmm. And so he and I did a lot of work together on that. He wanted to do programs for children. Mm. And when we were on the flight coming back from Ecuador, I said, well, let's do it. And so I scrambled around and I found a grant with Humanities. I can't think of it right now.
National Endowment for Humanities.
Yeah, Humanities. Like mm-hmm. And we got a little bit of grant to mm-hmm. Go around, and we went to all the schools from Gunnison to here to Rifle and mm-hmm. in between, mm-hmm. even Marble and all. And
what, talking about Ute culture?
He would talk about Ute mm-hmm. culture, and he would bring his drum or his flute, mm-hmm. and we'd have anything from just a few kids to hundreds, and they were mesmerized. Mm-hmm. He'd wear his regalia, mm-hmm. and he was the grandpa, mm-hmm. you know, he would tell grandpa stories. And then in the evening...
Grandpa stories, okay. He would tell great stories.
He did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in the evening, we had adult programs. Mm-hmm. The historical societies here and all would help support that in the library. And so we would have evening programs at the same time, and it always drew a big crowd. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves Clifford.
Right, right. He would, yeah. So your search for stories has led you on quite a journey here in the valley, because you were looking for stories when you started to talk to non-native elders, and then you realized that, this is what I'm hearing anyway, that the energy was coming from the ancestors, which meant the native elders, and so you connect with the late Clifford Duncan, Northern Ute elder, and travel with him to various parts of the world, help him start these programs. Meanwhile, are you still working on your other interviews?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I had
visits.
Visits. I actually had done all the visits for the Volume 1 book, mm-hmm. and I was getting ready to put it together. We had just decided, Alicia and I, mm-hmm. Alicia Almach from the Echo, mm-hmm. she was helping me with it, and decided, well, there's enough here to start a book.
Uh-oh.
And then I met Clifford.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So his chapter and the Utes, and mm-hmm. it makes total sense, mm-hmm. Volume 1, it starts with the first people. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really tickled that we had a lot of his stories and quotes and things to share in that first chapter. Right. But the first chapter came in last.
Yes. And sadly, he passed away,
four years ago.
4 years ago. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we miss Clifford.
Yeah.
There are many times when I think, oh, I need to go to... No, I can't say anything. I can't find out from Clifford. Yeah. But it's neat because your book has captured some of his words and some of his stories. I know I did my thesis, my master's thesis a few years ago on wild horse management. I think anybody who knows me knows I love wild horses. And I spent some time with Clifford. I think that was right around the time I met you.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to spend some time with him up in Roosevelt at his place with his horses.
Yeah.
And, you know, just talking, spent the whole day with them, just talking about wild horses and the Utes. Love and cohabitation, I guess, or connection with horses, with horse, as he would say, with horse,
with
not
horse.
The horse or horses, with horse. And that was wonderful to hear his stories. I have those recorded too.
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
good.
I do.
Good.
They're just there. It was really fortunate, I think, those of us who were able to spend a little time with him.
Definitely.
So Here's the Utes talking with Clifford. That's you get that information last. It goes in first in your book. And so you published the first Memoirs of a River, volume one. And how did you get these? How did you get the photographs and you know, the newspaper clippings and all of that stuff? Where did you?
Well, I was always involved with the historical societies.
Okay.
Both up in the Marble area and then when I came down here, because after I finished volume one, there are so many coincidences.
Really?
That I came across in everybody's stories.
Really? Like what?
Well, just in the idea of that there was part of the stories maybe that I got from up there, but then there were more characters and such that related to it down here. So I had come down and joined the Historical Society here and started doing the same thing, just going around and visiting folks. And I hosted...
Visiting. We're visiting. Just like we're doing now, we're visiting.
That's right. And I would, on Wednesdays, I would have the... I would volunteer at the museum and have a, you know, like tea and cookies or something, and folks would drop in and they would bring their pictures and tell me stories. And Ernie and Marge Jabaz came over several times. They have fabulous pictures, which are about the Satank story. And different ones here would say, why don't you write about this person? Why don't you write about that? And that's why when we go through, if you want to look through the table of contents a little bit...
This is volume two.
Right. This is all the Carbondale. So the volume one is going to tell all about people and places between Marble and BRB.
Okay. BRB.
Used to be.
You know, only people from around here would know BRB. What's that? B&B? No, BRB.
BRB.
What did that stand for?
It's in the book.
Okay.
I had to find out.
So the Table of Contents, Volume 2.
And so it, of course, one of the first stories that we had to talk about was the Hattie Thompson House, the Thompson Holland House, because at the time that I was down here, that's what our Historical Society was doing, was trying to save the house, you know, at that time.
Sure.
So that was quite a deal. And then, of course, Potato Days. We have to know about Potato Days. And there's a darling story in there about Guido Baget. They had the Baget grocery here in town on where are we now?
We're on 2nd and Main.
4th, or right across from Steve's Guitars.
Oh, wow.
Across
okay,
the
sure.
alley there. They had that. And he was 101 when I was visiting with him.
When you were visiting with him. 101. Do you have a picture of him in here?
I do. Because it turned out his family had come here to visit one weekend, and they saw that one of the plaques out in the on the wall of the building had misspelled their name. And he mentioned it to me, and I mentioned it at the Historical Society, but kind of forgot about it. And then the next time he invited me to his 100th birthday party, and so when I went down to Grand Junction, and the very first thing he said to me is, "Did they change it yet?" And I went, this is important.
Oh, yeah, it is.
You know, this is important to this family. So I came right back and talked to the Historical Society, and they said, of course, let's change it.
Change it. Let's fix it. You've got this great picture of Guido looking at his family's 1937 business calendar on the Thompson House kitchen wall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a wonderful picture.
That was such a wonderful moment.
Really?
Because Laron had invited him in. It wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, being shown as a museum yet. Mm-hmm. And he invited the family in when they came up. And they came in the back door through the laundry room. Mm-hmm.
Which is probably the way they always came in the
that
house.
That was mm-hmm. it. As a kid, mm-hmm. he was delivering groceries and driving it all the way out there to the house. Mm-hmm. And he said he never, until that day, had never gotten past the back
oh, wow.
door.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked into the kitchen, and here's this calendar. And I swear, I got to see him change from, I think he was 97 or 98 mm-hmm. at that time, mm-hmm. to like a 17-year-old boy.
Oh.
His face just lit up, and
oh.
he was just so happy. That's our store,
oh,
you know.
Neat.
And it was like a 1937
uh-huh. Jeez.
Calendar. And that, to me, was part of the whole thing and mm-hmm. the whole joy of mm-hmm. getting these stories of people together, because everyone has really great feelings and, if not memories, about living here.
Right.
And
that's just what makes it a community.
Even more so, yeah.
And I,
yeah.
I love that this is, that you've managed to put this community together. I just turned to page 126, and I have this movie at home.
Oh, no.
I do. Where did I find this? I don't know. I found it somewhere. It's Red Stallion in the Rockies, and it's really not all that great of a movie.
Uh-huh.
But you know, there were so many places in there. I thought, God, those places look familiar. Well, it was filmed here.
That was under chapter, let me see, which was that?
You need movie locations and cowboys.
Yeah. That's it. You need, yeah.
Oh, wow. I happened to turn. So you've got a whole chapter on movies and that were filmed around here. Charles Bronson. Messenger mm-hmm. of Death, 1988 film, was filmed in Glenwood. Charles Bronson was here in 1988 or 87. Mm-hmm. Wow. I think I remember that vaguely. Charles Bronson.
I even talked to some of the folks that, you know, had gotten their pictures taken, you know,
with
it,
Charles
down
Bronson.
There, you know, when oh. they were filming. And I forgot to say, the other part of this is that I love to do research.
Oh,
and
well, you'd
so
have to.
Everybody's story, I had to find out things behind it, you know, what
yeah.
was going on at that
yeah,
time and
yeah.
when they were talking and what they were doing and what they remembered. And so I would try. So there's a lot of just fun facts, like
well,
you say, intermixed in it.
Do you have any favorite time period?
Oh, that's a good question. A time period of the...
Oh, of your research?
Of the research.
That you've done, yeah.
You know what was really fun was that it was eerie at first until mm-hmm. I talked to some other historians mm-hmm. and they said it happens to them too. I had ghosts
oh,
on,
boy.
On me. I mean, pushing me.
Really?
And if we have time, I'll just tell this story real,
yes,
real quick.
Yes, we've got about
okay.
5, 6, 7 minutes.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay. Well,
ghost stories. Yes, I love them.
Linda Criswell mm-hmm. Kept telling me, you know, there was a story about a utopia, a man that came out here to start a utopia up in Missouri Heights.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I was like, oh, really? I'll have to find out about it. And then I would do something else, and then she mentioned it again. And it was just kind of like, you know, a little kick, you know, mm-hmm. and I was like, okay, fine. And so she told me who to talk to, which was, of course, Anita Witt. And
oh, Witt, Anita Witt, yes.
And Anita had written she wrote that wonderful book, They Came from Missouri.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's the definitive Carbondale Ranchers book.
Okay.
I mean, absolutely. Mm. I mean, it's a gold piece. And I didn't even touch all the ranchers in this book because I
well,
couldn't.
Well, she's got that other book, too, about the ranchers, and the film, a movie
right,
about the ranchers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Ranchers of the Roaring Fork mm-hmm, or something like mm-hmm. that. But at any rate, she had written a little chapter, and then I talked to Larry Williams, who was a great-great-grandson of the family that moved up to Missouri Heights,
wow.
based on this gentleman, H.D. Watson was his name, from Nebraska.
Watson.
And I'm trying to see if I can find it here. Yeah, there it is. And he had come out to Colorado. This was in the times when they were doing those utopias. That's what Greeley had done, and Horace Greeley had come out.
So we're talking 1920s?
Something like that, yeah. I think it was.
No, before that, 1800s.
Before that.
Definitely.
But
before that. Anyway.
H.D. Watson was from Kearney,
I don't know, yeah. Nebraska.
I think it's Kearney, Nebraska. Okay. And so when he came out here, the story from the Anita Witt person's perspective was that the ending of it was they came out and wrapped him in a jacket and these doctors took him away. And so nobody really knew what had happened
to him.
What
happened to H.D. Watson?
What happened to him? He just kind of disappeared. Mm-hmm. And then people started finding out that, you know, things hadn't been paid for in one thing or another.
Oh.
And it was kind of like maybe he was like the music man or some sort of thing like that. You know, here, you know, live up here on the top of this mountain where it's freezing
right.
cold and there's no water. And
give me all your money and he goes.
And stuff like that.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And so I think that the gist or the energy, I want to call it, of his story here was that he kind of waltzed off on everybody.
Mm-hmm. Page 65.
65, okay. And so again, I had to go and find out. Well, if he came from Kearney, there must be something about him there.
Oh.
And so I found out all about that. I went to the historical societies mm-hmm. over there. Mm-hmm. And they have this wonderful visionary man who built this incredible farm over there that had, I'm not going to go into all the details.
No, because it's all in the book.
And so he had created quite a big deal in the early 1900s
okay.
in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when he left here, there was this idea that he had been, you know, taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that Larry's great-great-grandparents were one of the families, like I said. And then they ended up, I think, saving part of it or selling part of it. And so when I went back, and I kind of let the story go,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
was my point.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of just like sort of dropped it. And then I kept getting little senses of that's not all the story. Don't end it
mm-hmm.
with that story of him running away.
There's more to
there
it.
There is. And that was the thing that I just kind of felt there was something over me, because this happened over a period of months.
Mm-hmm.
And I just get some sort of a little nudge.
Mm-hmm.
Keep researching on this story.
Mm-hmm.
Keep
mm-hmm.
researching on the story. And it talks about him going back home. There's nothing about him being in a. It just so happens Kearney has an insane asylum there. Was one of the things. And so, maybe he'd go back there. You know, did he go back there
uh-huh.
or what? But all of the references of him in their mm-hmm. history mm-hmm. were all positive.
Mm-hmm.
He was kooky, of
mm-hmm.
course, because
mm-hmm.
he was a visionary, mm-hmm. and he kind of did his ranching the way that they're doing out here at Sustainable Settings,
oh,
probably.
Okay. Way ahead of his time.
Way, way ahead. And I think it just was he wanted the world to know that maybe things didn't, not everything works out for visionaries mm-hmm. 100% all mm-hmm. the time.
Well,
but his intention was there.
You've got a great picture of this guy on page 65, and we are just about out of time. But I want to let listeners know that I'm talking with Charlotte Graham, Char Graham, and she's written these wonderful books, Memoirs of a River Up the Crystal, Volume 1 and Volume 2. She's got something on the Ute Council Tree, which came down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And James Searle's sculpture, Sowing the Future. So it's pretty up to date. And these are wonderful, wonderful books. And it's got me. I forgot about that.
So you're going to have
Leslie
to sign these,
Johnson
too.
And Roy Rickus and Cowboy Randy and Wick and Flash and Art Ackerman. It's Katie and Kay. Katie and Kay is in here. So give us a call at 963-0139. And anybody who contributes $100 or more to KDNK will get both copies signed and tied with a bow. And they're wonderful books. So give us a call, 963-0139. And this offer will hold. It's not just for today's show, although I would like to get some calls on this. 963-0139. $100 or more will get you not only help KDNK stay on the air, but we'll get you two copies or copies of Volume 1 and Volume 2. And we are out of time. Char Graham, thanks so much for joining me. I love having you on the show, and it's always so much fun.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.